The Capital Ideas podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin. Investment professionals reveal their best mentors, how they find their next great idea, and a few funny stories. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. American Funds Distributors, Inc.
This episode highlights from the Future of Everything Festival, where Wall Street Journal editors and industry minds examine how advancements in science and tech are revolutionizing business, culture, and society. This was recorded in front of a live audience on May 9th at Spring Studios in Tribeca.
The Future of Everything, a look ahead from the Wall Street Journal with Jennifer Strong.
If you've ordered wine at a trendy restaurant or bar lately, you've probably heard about the natural wine movement. It's a return to ancient winemaking practices that are allegedly better for our palates, our bodies, and the planet. But what is natural wine exactly, and why is it suddenly everywhere? Stan Parrish is the Future of Everything's editor-in-chief, and he's joined on the stage by Raw Wine founder Isabel Legeron and Jordan Salcito, director of wine special projects at Momofuku.
Welcome. Let's talk about drinking at an hour when everyone could use a drink. We'll be out of here shortly. Let's just lay out a definition, because this term gets thrown around all the time, and I feel like it means different things to different chefs and different sommeliers and different wine store owners. So, Isabel, let's start with you. Help us lay some groundwork. What does this actually mean?
So, you know, natural wine for me, and you're right, you know, there's no actual definition. So we know what an organic wine, what a biodynamic wine is. But when it comes to natural wine, no one has really come up with an official definition, which is internationally recognized. For me, a natural wine is a wine made from grape juice. And only grape juice, grown organically. And this might sound like it's an obvious statement, but if I was to take a poll just out there on the street and ask people how wine is made, people will say, oh, it's just grape juice, and then that's it. But in fact, you know, wine typically will be made with dozens and dozens of additives and from grapes that are not grown organically. So, you know, I think it's important to think about maybe the context as well.
Jordan, anything you want to add to that?
Maybe just to sort of help explain a little bit. I think natural wine, when I think of it, and this was something that I asked Alice Firing to help me explain to our team right when I joined Momofuku, but it applies to what's happening in the winery, whereas biodynamics, organics, that's what happens in the vineyard. And so natural wine is more encompassing of the decisions surrounding winemaking.
Just very quickly, you know, I think we need to think about wine has been produced for 8,000 years. We're very good at making wine. You know, we've got a very long track record of fermenting grapes, and it's only in the very recent decades that we've started really tinkering and adding a lot of additives. But, you know, we've been doing it naturally for maybe 7,000 something years, and then suddenly in the past sort of few decades, and we've started really adding a lot of additives and processing aids and so on.
So, Jordan, is it fair to say that this is just really a return to these ancient practices, or is it a little more complicated than that?
I mean, I think that that is the hope, and I think that that's the aspiration of the movement. As a buyer of wine, that's what interests me so much. I think, I know Isabel can speak more to this, but in addition to the health benefits of not consuming products with chemical pesticides or herbicides or fungicides on them, there is also a benefit of taste. And it's a commitment to a higher ideal that resonates with quality. I think, you know, when I think of building a list or drinking a bottle of wine, I want it to be delicious and I want it to be made with care and thoughtfully and with sustainability in mind.
So we've talked a little bit about what natural wine is. I want to talk about a little bit of what it isn't. What are some of the most concerning things that go into conventionally made wines that wind up in your bottle and then in your body that you were trying to avoid?
Well, I mean, you know, it really depends from country to country. You know, some countries have very specific rules, allow certain additives that may not be allowed in other places, for example. So it really is country dependent. You know, from the moment the grapes get into the winery to the moment that they are bottled and poured in your glass, you know, there can be a number of, you know, of dozens of additives. So, you know, some of them may be the most common ones that you may have heard of are obviously, you know, yeasts that are added to start the fermentation process. If I give you a very brief rundown as to how conventionally a wine is made, maybe that might make, you know, more sense. But you bring your grapes, and your grapes are full of this yeast population that are in your cellar, that are everywhere around you. I mean, you know, at home you can start making a culture for sourdough bread. It's the same when you bring the grapes in, and then you can get rid of that indigenous yeast population by dusting it with sulfites, for example. You can speed up the fermentation process by adding all sorts of enzymes and vitamins, and then, you know, you can sort of add animal derivatives, you know, whether it's gelatin or egg derivative, milk derivatives in during the fining process of the wine. If you want to speed up the process even more, you can use anti-firming agents. I mean, basically everything that can speed up the process and you make it sort of as controlled and as fast, yeah, then you have a product for it. You can add color, you know, whatever you want to rectify within that drop of wine that you have in your glass, there is a process and there is an additive for it. So I don't know if you want to add anything on.
No, I think that, I mean, and for me, when I just started learning about wine or really getting into a place where I was asking questions, it was fascinating because I think what is publicly so maligned is sulfur, and sulfur dioxide in small amounts occurs naturally in wine anyway. There are more sulfites in a spoonful of ketchup or a handful of raisins than in most wines or than in many wines. So I think it's shocking, I think, what does not get spoken about because many of the things that are most concerning to me are things that aren't on anyone's radar because they're not on a label. They're not available to find.
Yeah, I mean, and to be honest, I think that's the real crux of the issue here because at the end of the day, what we're here to talk about food, wine is a food, and I think whether we like it or not, there's a whole bunch of processes that's happening in the food industry. But to some extent, the consumer end of it is aware of what's going on because there is an ingredient labeling law. You know it lists all the ingredients. In terms of winemaking, we're completely in the dark. So, you know, when you go to your store, you pick up a bottle of wine, they'll say contains sulfite, which actually doesn't really mean anything because it doesn't tell you whether there's 15 parts per million or 200 parts per million.
Sulfur has been used as a preservative since the Roman Empire.
Well, actually...
Well, in small amounts?
Yeah, they didn't really... Because I did some research on that, and people say, oh, sulfites have been used since the Roman Empire, but it's more like towards the turn of the 20th century as an additive, but yeah.
A thousand years.
A few vintages.
And so I think that's what we need to challenge, you know, because at the end of the day, I think people should be able to make wine the way they like. The environmental impact and farming organically, that's a different issue. But what you put in your bottle, you have to declare and you have to be transparent about. And that's what we collectively need to fight about because the industry, the wine industry, is not going to push for that. It needs to be a request from the people who actually drink the bottle of wine and say, hey, it's time that I now know how my wine is made so I can pick the wines I want to drink accordingly. And that's what's missing currently, I think.
So critics tend to say that sometimes the natural wine label is sort of a cop-out. The wine is flawed. Oh, because it's natural, we couldn't use all these, you know, there are all these chemical processes that are unavailable to us because we're making a natural wine. What do you say to people who say that this is a sort of a curtain that they're hiding behind?
Yeah, well, I think a couple of things. I think we're at the beginning of this movement and this conversation, and that's a very exciting time. And as we spoke about earlier at the beginning, there is not regulation around it. And so anything that is a movement with momentum without regulation, it's easy for people who maybe don't have the same quality standards that are required to make beautiful, compelling, high-quality, delicious natural wine. It's easy enough for them to jump on the bandwagon because no one is regulating their introduction to it. But I also think that, like with anything, like I have a 2-year-old at home, and he has recently learned to walk, and now he's learning to talk, and he's not good at it at first, and he tries and he fails, and then he's a little better every time. And I feel like we're at the beginning of this movement and this conversation. There are certainly wines that I've had that I would not have again that are flawed, but I taste less and less and less of those. And I think that that's just something that is a natural byproduct of any movement that is important and that means something.
For me, I don't think it's such a, in a way, bleak picture. I think it's very important to actually frame what is a fault, right? If you look at the cheese industry and if you pick up, you know, Babybel or Cheese Straw, whatever it is that you have. Sorry, I'm from the UK, so I don't have those commercial references necessarily, but, you know, like there's these cheese straws that doesn't taste of anything, and then suddenly you buy...
String cheese.
String cheese. Okay, thank you. And then suddenly you go to your farmer's market, you buy a very mature piece of cheese made from raw milk, but the taste profile is completely different. And I think what's happened now is that we are, as consumers of wine, you know, we have an expectation as to what a wine should taste like. And this perception of what a wine should taste like has been only shaped by very modern winemaking practices that are only, you know, a few decades old. So if I say to you Sauvignon Blanc in your head, you know, you'll have Sauvignon Blanc, gooseberries, bright fruit, explosive flavors, tropicals, quite pale, maybe a bit smoky, all of this. This is Sauvignon Blanc. And now I'll give you something which is made completely naturally, which is a bit cloudy, which is dark gold, which tastes completely different. And then very often people say, well, this is not a Sauvignon Blanc. And I'm inviting people to to keep an open mind and think, what actually is a Sauvignon Blanc? Is a Sauvignon Blanc where you've been fed as a Sauvignon Blanc in a bottle, which is a product of aromatic yeast, block malolactic fermentation, rectified acidity? Is this what a Sauvignon Blanc is? Or is a Sauvignon Blanc something which has been fermented naturally on soil that have been made completely, work completely organically with a completely different expression? And I think that's what's important, is I think we need to challenge that we currently think and taste wine with a very blinkered vision and a very small vision of what a wine should taste like. And yes, there may be some problems in natural wines, the way in, I think in any wines, you know, you can have good grapes and bad winemakers, you know, but that goes with chefs, that goes in any sort of industry. So I think, you know, it's not, for me, it's not as a...
Well, and I would say more and more and more of the wines that I taste are so beautiful and stunning, and I am not a consumer. I would say my palate, while I appreciate a good Sauvignon Blanc from New Zealand or Loire or wherever, it's, I mean, I think you could look even to a winery like Domaine Chauve, for example, that has been making wine since 1481, and they're not labeling themselves as natural winemakers, but they've never used pesticides. They've never used that kind of chemical. They farm by hand or with winch, and they have a small team of three. So I think it's so important to remember that and to keep an open mind. But I would say even with that, I do think that there's a sort of, actually I'll quote Jean Foyard. I remember the first time I went to visit him in Beaujolais, and he's one of the winemakers of Hermit Lynch's Gang of Four. It was one of the first wines I ever had from Beaujolais when I was working at 11 Madison Park, and the wine director Jean Reagan had just put it onto the list, and it was just transporting, and it was also a fraction of the price of most of the other wines on the list. And of course, you know, all we wanted to do was sell it so we could keep opening. But when I finally got to meet him, I said, why is it that, you know, that your wines are so beautiful and so pure, and you are the spokesperson for this movement, you know, this natural wine movement? And I guess I should say that once I got excited about this movement, I did try and taste everything I could find, and that is where I did find some bottles that were not correct, and not because they were bready, because I love bread, or funky, or not sort of fitting into a cookie cutter. They just were not correct wines.
I gotta say, as a fan of this stuff and probably too frequent consumer of it, I find that a lot of these bottles taste really young. Is there a reason for that commercially, from the way this is distributed? Why, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that is, you know, without getting too technical, because, you know, I think the issue, okay, so when you make natural wine, it's like when you make sourdough bread, you don't rush a sourdough bread. You don't do a sourdough bread in like 3 hours, right? You wait 12, 48, 72 hours even to get a really good sourdough bread. And with wine, it's exactly the same. The problem is you've got your juice coming in, you make your fermentation naturally, and it needs time. And it needs, I would say, it needs one winter to like having almost like a curing process. And then you need to wait for summer months. And then ideally you want a second winter to do, you know, another curing process in a way. And that's the maturation process. And if you use tons of additives and processes and machinery, you can speed that up because you remove all the microbiology, you sterile filter it, and you get a juice which is clear and stuff and stable in 3 months. When you work naturally, it doesn't work like that. And I think very often there's a pressure because these growers, some of them are getting popular. They have a lot of pressure at home. You know, banks don't lend them money. They don't have the cash flow. So they have to get the wine out there as quickly as possible. And I think sometimes what happens is that when you get a wine that lands on the market, maybe in March, April, or May, it may be that actually it's not yet stabilized. It's not yet fully matured. And I think partly, you know, is because these are really on the breadline, and sometimes they don't make it until the end of the month, you know, so there is this pressure.
You find that too as a sommelier?
I do. I would say, and I look at that as a benefit. I mean, I think it is naturally, it's very quaffable. The tannins are very gentle and well-managed, so I never have had a problem with that. I've always enjoyed it, and I think that it works very well as a food pairing with a variety of things. It's very easy to open a bottle of a number of red wines and drink it with oysters in the way that opening a bottle of, you know, old Bordeaux or Burgundy is not quite going to give the same, it's just not going to be pleasurable in the same way.
So let's talk about like finding this stuff for consumers who are interested in it. Obviously, there's no universal definition. There's no real labeling system. Is the onus just on the consumer to figure out who is making this and where to get it? But help us understand where to find this if this is something we want to seek out.
Yeah. I mean, to some extent, look, we are talking about a tiny, you know, if we talk about numbers, this is like less than 1% of the wine industry is made this way. I mean, I would say 0.001%. It's really tiny. So yes, it's not the easiest to find, but there is this kind of underground community. And if you start tapping into that, you find out the right restaurants, you find out the right shops. I organize an event called Raw Wine, and we bring all the growers together, and then a lot of restaurants get involved. So I think in a way, you have to make a little bit of an effort, but once you tap into this and once you start drinking those wines, then you meet more people, then you're really connected, and then you can travel the world and actually drink really great wines. And when people stock natural wine in a restaurant, I can tell you that, you know, this is a lot about food. They will work with really very good produce, sustainably farmed, local produce. And it really goes hand in hand. Basically, you know, the natural wine movement is exactly what's happening in the food industry. You know, we're just a bit behind. But all the issues that you've been discussing are completely relevant to our industry. But, you know, we are probably a few years behind. So that's why I'm so glad that you're bringing this topic here.
I would also just maybe add to that, since you are presumably from New York, we're so lucky to be in this city because we do have such amazing access to wines, and there is a lot of interest in importers and in producers to have their wines in this market. And so just like Isabel was saying, there's a great opportunity to really tap into that here, and there are a number of places. There's Discovery Wines in the East Village, there's Ten Bells Restaurant, there's Racine's, there's actually Verve Wine in Tribeca has a lot of cool things. And once you start asking questions to your local wine shop, then you will get more and more answers. And if they don't have a bottle, they can direct you to somebody who will.
And, you know, if you, may I just say,
absolutely.
If you really care about what you eat, you have to care about what you drink. You know, otherwise you're being hypocritical. Because, you know, if you really think about actually you're shopping in places where you want to know where the meat's from or the milk's from, your vegetable, then you have to do the same thing for what you put in your body in terms of wine. And wine is a food. It's just we've placed it as this kind of intellectual product that it means so much that you can buy this bottle of wine, which is $200, because it's got the right label and everybody knows about it. Let's just forget about all of that. And let's just remember that wine is a food product and it's part of the same chain. You know, it's all about farming. And please, you know, if you really think about, you know, what I'm going to eat tonight, I invite you to just consider about what I'm going to drink tonight and to look into it, because you'll be amazed in terms of what's going on behind actually closed doors at the moment.
Practical and ultra scientific question.
Yes.
Is natural winemaking a hangover reducer?
So, do you want to answer that question first?
I imagine that everyone's body processes and metabolizes alcohol differently. I would say I find I have less hangovers when I'm drinking the same amount of natural wine as wine. I also should also preface that by saying I really don't drink much anymore, anything that isn't natural wine, or that at least I know how the grapes were farmed, because that's important to me in this age. And I think, you know, we're talking about transparency, and that's something that we as, I think, a generation are just demanding more of in every aspect of our lives. This is not a mystical movement at all. If you think of, like, just the clothing industry, Everlane's slogan, I believe, is radical transparency. So it's something that we're just demanding more and asking more questions as consumers, and I think this just fits right into that, as we should.
So can I just say about the hangover thing? Because I think, you know, everybody says, oh, actually, you know, if natural wine means you can drink more and actually let's get a hangover. So obviously you have to drink loads of water because it's alcohol. But there's actually been some studies. I wrote a book called Natural Wine, and then when I researched the health element of it, I came across some studies that are actually incredibly interesting. And it's still very early days because it's actually unethical to test human beings with alcohol, so it's, you know, it's actually quite tricky to do. But basically, so far the findings are that, because you mentioned sulfites earlier on, you know, in food, but the problem is alcohol and sulfite combination. So when you ingest alcoholic drinks with a lot of sulfites, the sulfites actually inhibits your body's ability. Well, that's what it suggests. I'm not making any claims in the US because I don't want to get sued. It suggests that basically your body's ability to process the alcohol as an ingredient is a lot less. So basically the sulfites hampers your body's natural ability to digest the alcohol. And so the alcohol and the poisonous aspect of it is in your body for a lot longer. Whereas if you drink completely sulfite-free wines or wines made without sulfites, you digest it a lot better and you don't get a lot of the side effects. So there is, you can research it. There's been some studies in Italy for that, some university research, and they've done testing on wine with sulfites, wine without sulfites, and actually looking at, you know, the way your enzymes respond and so on. So there is actually some medical funding.
Some hard science to this theory. That's great news for all of us. You're producing a delicious canned grapefruit wine spritzer called Ramona. Natural wine in there or not?
So it is wine made with organic grapes, all farmed organically. And there are some, we do add a little bit of sulfur just so that we don't end up with a brown base wine. But yeah, I guess the thing that I wish we, and maybe I need to just read this research, is like there are sulfites that occur naturally in fermentation. They exist. So it's impossible to have wine that is completely sulfite free. And then you have, say, like the Franzia, or the, I shouldn't name any names, but maybe other companies that add perhaps a lot of sulfites, and there has to be a happy balance. It can't be all or none, I guess. So I'm just curious. I'm now just very curious to read these reports. But yes, all organically grown.
We unfortunately are out of time. Isabel, Jordan, thank you so much
thank
for joining
you.
Us.
Thank you.
The Future of Everything is a production of The Wall Street Journal. This episode was produced by Anthony Green, Brian Gutierrez, Kristen Schwab, Laura Sim, and Garrett Crow. John Wurdock is the executive producer of WSJ Podcasts. Stan Parrish is the editor-in-chief of The Future of Everything. We had help with this episode from The Wall Street Journal's Nikki Waller and Kim Last, with special thanks to festival organizers Karen Annis, Catherine Sterling, Andrea Acosta, Robin Wood Saylor, and Anna Raftal. Thanks for listening. I'm Jennifer Strong in New York.
What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.